Chapter 4. Offers. "What have we here?" a woman's hard voice said. Fail looked up and stared, hot tea gone from her thoughts for the moment. Two Aiel women with a much shorter Guy Shine woman between them came out of the swirling snow, sinking halfway up their calves in the white carpet that covered the ground, but still making powerful strides. The taller women did, anyway. The Guy Shine stumbled and floundered, trying to keep up, and one of the others had a hand on her shoulder to make sure she did. All three were worth a stare. The woman in white kept her head meekly down as much as she could, and her hands folded in her wide sleeves as a Guy Shine was supposed to, but her robes had the sheen of heavy silk of all things. Guy Shine were forbidden jewelry, yet a wide, elaborate belt of gold and firedrops cinched her waist, and a matching collar was just visible inside her cowl, nearly covering her neck. Very few besides royalty could afford the like. Strange as the Guy Shine was, however, it was the others Fail studied. Something told her they were wise ones. There was too much authority about them for anything else. These were women used to giving orders and being obeyed. Beyond that, though, their simple presence caught the eye. The woman pushing the Guy Shine along, a stern blue-eyed eagle with a dark gray shawl wrapped around her head, stood a good span in height, as much as most Aiel men, while the other was at least half a hand taller than Perrin. She was not bulky, though, except in one particular. Sandy yellow hair flowed to her waist, held back from her face by a wide dark kerchief, and her brown shawl lay across her shoulders, open enough to show an incredible amount of bosom thrusting half out of her pale blouse. How did she avoid freezing, exposing so much skin in this weather? All those heavy necklaces of ivory and gold must feel like bands of ice. As they stopped in front of the kneeling prisoners, the eagle-faced woman frowned disapprovingly at the Shido who had captured them and made a curt gesture of dismissal with her free hand. For some reason, she continued to hold on to the Guy Shine's shoulder tightly. The three maidens turned immediately, hurrying toward the passing throng of Shido. One of the men did as well, but Rolan and the rest exchanged flat-eyed looks before they followed. Perhaps it meant something, perhaps nothing. Fail suddenly knew how someone in a whirlpool felt, grabbing desperately at straws. "What we have is more Guy Shine for Savannah," the incredibly tall woman said in amused tones. She had a strong face that some might call pretty, but alongside the other wise one she seemed soft. "Savannah will not be satisfied until the entire world is Guy Shine, Therava. Not that I would object to that myself," she finished with a laugh. The eagle-eyed wise one did not laugh. Her face was stone. Her voice was stone. "Savannah has too many Guy Shine already, Somerin. We have too many Guy Shine. They slow us to a crawl when we should race." Her iron stare ran along the kneeling line. Fail flinched when that gaze touched her and hurriedly buried her face in the mug. She had never seen Therava before, but in that glance she knew the woman's sort, eager to crush any challenge utterly and capable of seeing challenge in a casual glance. Bad enough when it was only a fool noble at court or someone encountered on the road, but escape could become more than difficult if this eagle took a personal interest. Just the same, she watched the woman from the corner of her eye. It felt like watching a banded adder, scales glittering in the sun, coiled a foot from her face. "Meek," she thought. "I am kneeling here meekly, with no thought in my head but drinking my tea. No need to look at me twice, you cold-eyed witch." She hoped the others saw what she did. Aleandra did not. She tried to rise to her swollen feet, tottered, then sank back to her knees with a wince. Even so, she knelt upright in the falling snow, head high, a red-striped blanket held around her as if it were a fine silk shawl over a splendid gown. Bared legs and wind-blown hair spoiled the effect somewhat, yet she was still arrogance on a pedestal. "I am Aleandra Maritha Kigarin, Queen of Gildan," she announced loudly, very much queen, addressing ruffian vagabonds. "You would be wise to treat me and my companions well and punish those who have handled us so crudely. You can gain a large ransom for us, larger than you can imagine, and pardon for your crimes. My liege lady and I will require suitable accommodation for ourselves until arrangements can be made, and for her maid. Lesser will do for the others, so long as they are not harmed. I will pay no ransom if you ill-treat the least of my liege lady's servants." Fail could have groaned. Did the idiot woman think these people were simple bandits? Only she had no time to. "Is that true, Galina? Is she a Wetlander queen?" Another woman rode out from behind the prisoners, her tall black gelding walking softly in the snow. Fail thought she must be Aiel, but she was unsure. It was difficult to say for certain with the other woman on horseback, but she seemed at least as tall as Fail herself, and few women were except among the Aiel, certainly not with those green eyes in a sun-dark face. And yet, that wide dark skirt looked like the Aiel women's at a glance, but it was divided for riding and appeared to be silk, as was her creamy blouse, and the hem revealed red boots in her stirrups. The wide folded kerchief that held back her long golden hair was brocaded red silk, and a thumb-thick circlet of gold and fire-drops nestled over it. In contrast to the wise one's worked gold and carved ivory, her ropes of fat pearls and necklaces of emeralds and sapphires and rubies half hid nearly as much bosom as Somerin had on display. The bracelets climbing almost to her elbows differed from those worn by the two wise ones in the same way, and Aiel did not wear rings, but gems sparkled on every finger. Instead of a dark shawl, a bright crimson cloak, bordered with golden embroidery and lined with white fur, flared around her in the stiff breeze. She did sit her saddle with the awkwardness of Aiel on horseback, though. "And a queen's," her tongue tripped unfamiliarly. "Liege lady? That means the queen swore oath to her? A truly powerful woman, then. Answer me, Galina." The silk-clad Guy Shine hunched her shoulders and favored the mounted woman with a groveling smile. "A truly powerful woman to have a queen swear fealty, Savanna," she said eagerly. "I've never heard of the like, yet I think she is who she claims. I saw Aleandra once, years ago, and the girl I recall could well have grown into this woman. And she was crowned Queen of Gildan. What she is doing in Amadicia, I don't know. The White Cloaks or Rodron, either one, would snap her up in an instant if they—" "Enough, Lena," Thurava said firmly. The hand on Galina's shoulder tightened visibly. "You know I hate it when you natter." The Guy Shine flinched as if struck, and her mouth snapped shut. Practically writhing, she smiled up at Thurava, fawning even more wretchedly than she had for Savannah. Gold flashed on one of her fingers as she wrung her hands. Fear flashed in her eyes, too. Dark eyes. Definitely not Aiel. Thurava seemed oblivious to the woman's truckling. A dog had been called to heel and had obeyed. Her attention was all on Savannah. So Merin eyed the Guy Shine sideways, her lips twisting with contempt, but she folded her shawl across her bosom and looked to Savannah as well. Aiel did not give away much on their faces, yet plainly she disliked Savannah and was wary of her at the same time. Fael's eyes followed the mounted woman, too, over the edge of her mug. In a way, it was like seeing Loghain or Mazrim Taim. Savannah also had painted her name across the sky in blood and fire. Kyrian would need years to recover from what she had wrought there, and the ripples had spread to Andor and Tyr and beyond. Perrin laid the blame to a man called Culloden, but Fael had heard enough of this woman to have a shrewd idea whose hand had been behind it all. And no one disputed that the slaughter at Dumai's Wells was Savannah's fault. Perrin had almost died there. She had a personal claim on Savannah for that. She might be willing to let Roland keep his ears if she could settle that claim. The flamboyantly garbed woman walked her mount slowly along the line of kneeling women, her steady green eyes almost as cold as Thurava's. The sound of snow crunching beneath the black's hooves suddenly seemed loud. "Which of you is the maid?" An odd question. Megden hesitated, tight-jawed, before raising a hand from beneath her blanket. Savannah nodded thoughtfully. "And the liege lady?" Fael considered holding back, but one way or another Savannah would learn what she wanted to know. Reluctantly, she lifted her hand, and shivered from more than the cold. Thurava was watching with those cruel eyes, paying close attention to Savannah and to those she marked out. How anyone could be unaware of that auguring gaze, Fayil did not understand, yet Savannah seemed so as she turned her gelding down the back of the line. "They cannot walk on those feet," she said after a moment. "I do not see why they should ride with the children. Heal them, Galina." Fayil gave a start and almost dropped the clay mug. She pushed it toward the guy Shine, trying to make out that that was what she had been doing all along. It was empty anyway. The scarred fellow calmly began filling it up again from his water bag of tea. Heal? Surely she could not mean... "Very well," Therava said, giving the guy Shine woman a shove that staggered her. "Do it quickly, little Lena. I know you do not want to disappoint me." Galina caught herself from falling, but only to struggle on toward the prisoners. She sank above her knees in places, her robes dragging in the snow, but she was intent on reaching her goal. Wide-eyed fear and revulsion mingled in her round face with, could it be, eagerness? All in all, it was a sickening combination. Savannah completed her circuit, coming back to where Fayil could see her clearly, and reined in, facing the wise ones. The woman's full mouth was tight. The icy breeze rippled her cloak, but she seemed unaware of it, or of the snow falling on her head. "I have just received word, Therava." Her voice was calm, though lightning bolts should have been flashing from her eyes. "Tonight we camp with the Jonin." "A fifth sept," Therava replied flatly. For her also, wind and snow might as well not have existed. "Five, while 78 remains scattered on the wind. Well that you remember your pledge to reunite the Shido, Savannah. We will not wait forever." Not lightning bolts now. Savannah's eyes were green volcanoes erupting. "I always do what I say, Therava. Well that you remember that, and remember that you advise me. I speak for the clan chief." Wheeling her gelding, she drummed her heels on the animal's ribs, trying to make him gallop back toward the river of people and wagons, though no horse could do so in that depth of snow. The black managed something faster than a walk, but not much. Their faces expressionless as masks, Therava and Somerin watched horse and rider fade into the falling white veil. An important exchange, at least to Fayil. She knew tension tight as a harp string when she saw it, and mutual hatred. A weakness that might be exploited, if she could puzzle out how. And it seemed the Shido were not all here after all, though more than enough seemed to be, judging by the unending river of them passing by. Galina reached her then, and anything else fled from her mind. Smoothing her face to a ragged semblance of composure, Galina clutched Fayil's head in both hands without speaking a word. Fayil might have gasped, she could not be sure. The world seemed to fly by as she jerked halfway to her feet. Hours streaked by, or heartbeats crawled. The white-clad woman stepped back, and Fayil collapsed on her face atop the brown blanket to lie panting against the rough wool. Her feet no longer hurt, but healing always brought its own hunger, and she'd eaten nothing since yesterday's breakfast. She could have wolfed down plates of anything that even looked like food. She no longer felt tired, but her muscles were water instead of pudding. Pushing herself up with arms that wanted to fold under her weight, she unsteadily gathered the gray-striped blanket again. She felt stunned as much by what she had seen on Galina's hand just before Galina seized her, as she did by the healing. Gratefully, she let the scarred man hold the steaming mug to her mouth. She was not sure her fingers could have held on to it. Galina was wasting no time. A dazed Alejandra was just attempting to rise from flat on her face, a striped covering blanket sliding to the ground unnoticed. Her welts were gone, of course. Megden still lay sprawled between her two blankets, loose limbs poking out in every direction, and twitching as she feebly tried to collect herself. Chiad, with Galina's hands on her head, lurched all the way to her feet, arms flung wide, breath leaving her in a loud rush. The yellowed swelling on her face faded away even as Fayil watched. The maiden dropped as if pole-axed when Galina moved on to Bane, though she began stirring almost at once. Fayil attended to her tea, and furious thought. The gold on Galina's finger was a great serpent ring. She might have thought it a strange present from whoever gave the woman her other jewels, if not from the healing. Galina was Aes Sedai. She must be. But what was an Aes Sedai doing here in Gaishine robes? Not to mention apparently ready to lick Savannah's wrist and kiss Thurava's feet. An Aes Sedai. Standing over a limp Arala, the last in the line, Galina panted slightly from the effort of healing so many so quickly, and gazed at Thurava as though hopeful for a word of praise. Without so much as a look at her, the two wise ones started toward the River of Shido, their heads together talking. After a moment, the Aes Sedai scowled and lifted her robes, hurrying after them as quickly as she could. She glanced back more than once, though. Fael had the feeling that she did it even after the falling snow had put a curtain between them. More Gaishine came the other way, a dozen men and women, and only one was Aiel, a lanky redhead with a thin white scar from hairline to jaw. Fael recognized short, pallid Kyrianen, and others she thought might be Amadisian or Altaran, taller and darker, and even a bronze-skinned Domani. The Domani and one of the other women wore wide belts of shiny golden chain tight around their waists, and collars of the flat links around their necks. So did one of the men. In any case, jewelry on Gaishine seemed unimportant except as an oddity, especially alongside the food and clothing they brought. Some of the newcomers carried baskets with loaves of bread and yellow cheese and dried beef, and the Gaishine already there with their water bags of tea provided drink to wash it down. Fael was not alone in stuffing her mouth with unseemly haste even while she dressed, clumsily and with more mind to speed than modesty. The hooded white robe and two thick underrobes seemed wondrously warm, just to keep the air off, and so were heavy woolen stockings and soft Aiel boots that laced to her knees. Even the boots had been bleached white, but they did not fill up the hole in her middle. The meat was tough as boot leather, the cheese nearly rock-hard and the bread not much softer, yet they tasted like a feast. Her mouth watered for every bite. Chewing a mouthful of cheese, she knotted the last bootlace and stood, smoothing down her robes. As she reached for some more bread, one of the women wearing gold, plump and plain and weary-eyed, took another belt of golden chain out of a cloth sack hanging from her shoulder. Hastily swallowing, Fael stepped back. "I would rather not have that, thank you." She had a sinking feeling she had been wrong to dismiss the adornments as unimportant. "What you want does not matter," the plump woman replied tiredly. Her accent was Amadisian and cultured. "You serve the Lady Savannah now. You will wear what you are given and do as you are told, or you will be punished until you see the error of your ways." A few paces away, Magdan was fending off the Domani, resisting being fitted with a collar. Alejandra was backing away from the man who wore golden chains, her hands raised and a sickly expression on her face. He held out one of the belts toward her. Thankfully, they were both looking to Fael, though. Perhaps that switching in the forest had done some good. Exhaling heavily, Fael nodded to them, then allowed the plump Gaishine to fasten the wide belt around her. With her example, the other two let their hands fall. It seemed one blow too many for Alejandra, who stood staring at nothing as she was belted and collared. Magdan did her best to glare a hole through the slim Domani. Fael tried smiling encouragement, but smiling was difficult. To her, the collar's catch snapping shut sounded like a prison door being locked. Belt and collar could be removed as easily as they had been put on, but Gaishine serving the Lady Savannah surely would be watched very closely. Disaster was piling on disaster. Things had to get better from here on. They had to. Soon, Fael found herself tramping through the snow on wobbly legs with a stumbling, dull-eyed Alejandra and a scowling Magdan, surrounded by Gaishine leading pack animals, carrying large covered baskets on their backs, dragging loaded barrows with the wheels lashed to wooden sleds. The carts and wagons had sleds or broad runners, too, with the wheels tied on top of the snow-shrouded cargo. Snow might be unfamiliar to the Shido, but they had learned something of traveling in it. Neither Fael nor the other two bore any burdens, though the plump Amadisian woman made clear that they would be expected to carry or haul tomorrow and from then on. However many Shido were in the column, it seemed a great city on the move, if not a nation. Children up to 12 or 13 rode on the carts and wagons, but everyone else walked. All of the men wore the cut-in sore, but most women wore skirts and blouses and shawls like the wise ones, and most of the men carried only a single spear or no weapon at all and looked softer than the others. Soft, meaning that there were stones softer than granite. By the time the Amadisian left, without giving her name or saying much more than obey or be punished, Fail realized that she had lost sight of Bane and the rest somewhere in the falling snow. No one tried to make her keep a particular place, so she tramped wearily back and forth across the column, accompanied by Aleandra and Megden. Keeping her hands folded together in her sleeves made walking difficult, especially wading through snow, but it did keep them warm. Warmer than the alternative, at least. The wind made sure they kept their hoods well up. Despite the identifying golden belts, neither Guy Shine nor Shido looked at them twice. Despite crossing the column a dozen times or more, however, the search proved fruitless. There were people in white robes everywhere, more than without, and any of those deep cowls could have hidden her other companions. "We will have to find them tonight," Megden said finally. She actually managed to stalk through the deep snow, if in an ungainly fashion. Her blue eyes were fierce inside the cavern of her hood, and she gripped the broad golden chain around her neck with one hand as if wanting to rip it off. "As it is, we're taking 10 steps to 1 for everyone else. 20 for 1. It will do us little good to arrive at tonight's camp too exhausted to move." On Fail's other side, Aleandra roused from her numbness enough to raise an eyebrow at the decisiveness in Magden's voice. Fail merely looked at her maid, but that was enough to set Megden blushing and stammering. What had gotten into the woman? Still, it might not be what she expected from a serving woman, but she could not fault Magden's spirit in a companion for escape. A pity the woman could not channel more. Fail had had great hopes of that once, until she learned that Megden possessed so little ability it was useless. "Tonight it must be, Megden," she agreed, or however many nights it took. She did not mention that. Hurriedly she surveyed the people nearest them to make sure no one was close enough to overhear. The Shido, whether in cut-in sore or not, moved through the falling snow purposefully, pressing forward toward an unseen goal. The other Guy Shine, moved with a different purpose, obey or be punished. "The way they ignore us," she went on, "it should be possible to just fall by the wayside, so long as you don't try under a Shido's nose. If either of you finds a chance, take it. These robes will help you hide in the snow, and once you find a village, the gold they've so graciously given us will see you back to my husband. He will be following." Not too quickly, she hoped. Not too closely, at least. The Shido had an army here. A small army, perhaps, compared to some, but larger than Perrin's. Aleandra's face hardened in determination. "I will not leave without you," she said softly. Softly, yet in firm tones. "I will not take my oath of fealty lightly, my lady. I will escape with you or not at all." "She speaks for both of us," Megden said. "I may be only a simple maid," she wrung the word with scorn. "But I won't leave anyone behind to these bandits." Her voice was not simply firm. It brooked no opposition. Really, after this, Lini would have to have a very long talk with her before she was fit to hold her position. Fail opened her mouth to argue. No, to command. Aleandra was her sworn woman, and Megden her maid, however fire-brained captivity had made her. They would follow her orders. But she let the words die on her tongue. Dark shapes approaching through the tide of Shido and the falling snow resolved into a cluster of Aiel women with their shawls framing their faces. Therava led them. A murmured word from her, and the others slowed to keep pace behind while Therava joined Fail and her companions. That was to say, she walked alongside them. Her fierce eyes seemed to chill even Magden's enthusiasm, not that she gave them more than a glance. To her, they were not worth looking at. "You're thinking of escape," she began. No one else opened her mouth, but the wise one added, "Do not try denying it," in a scornful voice. "We will try to serve as we should, wise one," Fail said carefully. She kept her head down in her cowl and made sure not to meet the taller woman's eyes. "You know something of our ways?" Tharava sounded surprised, but it vanished quickly. "Good. But you take me for a fool if you think I believe you will serve meekly. I see spirit in the three of you, for wetlanders. Some never try to escape, but only the dead succeed. The living are always brought back. Always."
"I will heed your words, wise one," Fael said humbly.
"Always? Well, there had to be a first time. We all will."
"Oh, very good," Tharava murmured. "You might even convince someone as blind as Savannah. Know this, however, Geishine. Wetlanders are not as others who wear white. Rather than being released at the end of a year and a day, you will serve until you are too bent and withered to work. I am your only hope of avoiding that fate."
Fael stumbled in the snow, and if Aleandra and Megden had not caught her windmilling arms, she would have fallen. Tharava gestured impatiently for them to keep moving. Fael felt sick. Tharava would help them escape? Chiad and Bane claimed the Aiel knew nothing of the game of houses and scorned wetlanders for playing it, but Fael recognized the currents swirling around her now. Currents that would pull all of them under if she misstepped.
"I do not understand, wise one."
She wished her voice did not sound so hoarse suddenly. Perhaps that very hoarseness convinced Tharava, though. People like her believed in fear as a motivation before any other. At any rate, she smiled. It was not a warm smile, just a curving of thin lips, and the only emotion it conveyed was satisfaction. "All three of you will watch and listen while you serve Savannah. Each day a wise one will question you, and you will repeat every word Savannah said and who she spoke to. If she talks in her sleep, you will repeat what she mumbles. Please me, and I will see that you are left behind." Fael wanted no part of this, but refusal was out of the question. If she refused, none of them would survive the night. She was certain of that. Tharava would take no chances. They might not even survive until nightfall. This snow would hide three white-clad corpses quickly, and she very much doubted that anyone within sight would so much as protest if Tharava decided to slit a few throats then and there. Everyone was focused on moving forward through the snow in any case. They might not even see.
"If she learns of it," Fael swallowed. The woman was asking them to walk out on a crumbling cliff. No, she was ordering them to.
Did the Aiel kill spies? She had never thought to ask Chiad or Bane that.
"Will you protect us, wise one?"
The hard-faced woman caught Fael's chin with steely fingers, pulling her to a halt, pulling her up on her toes. Tharava's eyes caught hers just as tightly. Fael's mouth went dry. That stare promised pain.
"If she learns of it, Geishine, I will trice you up for cooking myself, so make sure she does not. Tonight you will serve in her tents, you and 100 others, so you will not have many labors to distract you from what is important."
A moment's careful study of the three of them, and Tharava gave a satisfied nod. She saw three soft wetlanders, too weak to do anything but obey. Without another word, she released Fael and turned away, and in moments she and the other wise ones were swallowed by the snow. For a time, the three women struggled on in silence. Fael did not bring up anyone escaping alone, much less give orders. She was certain that if she did, the others would balk again. Aside from anything else, complying now would make it seem Tharava had changed their minds, that fear of her had. Fael knew enough of the other two women to be sure they would die before admitting that the woman frightened them. Tharava certainly frightened her. "And I'd swallow my tongue before admitting it aloud," she thought wryly.
"I wonder what she meant by cooking," Aleandra said finally. "White cloak questioners sometimes turn prisoners over a fire on a spit, I've heard."
Megden wrapped her arms around herself, shuddering, and Aleandra freed a hand from her sleeves long enough to pat the other woman's shoulder.
"Do not worry. If Savannah has 100 servants, we may never get close enough to hear anything, and we can choose what we report, so it cannot be traced back to us."
Megden laughed bitterly inside her white hood.
"You think we still have small choices. We have none. You need to learn about having no choices. That woman didn't pick us out because we have spirit. She almost spat the word. I'll wager every one of Savannah's other servants has had that lecture from Thurava, too. If we miss a word we should have heard, you can be sure she'll know of it. You may be right, Aleandra allowed after a moment. But you will not speak to me again in that fashion, Megden. Our circumstances are trying, to say the least, but you will remember who I am. Until we escape, Megden replied, you are Savannah's servant. If you don't think of yourself as a servant every minute, then you might as well climb onto that spit. And leave room for the rest of us, because you will put us on it as well. Aleandra's cowl hid her face, but her back grew stiffer with every word. She was intelligent, and knew how to do what she must, but she had a queen's temper when she did not control it. Fail spoke before she could erupt. Until we manage to get away, we are all servants, she said firmly. Light. The last thing she needed was the pair of them squabbling. But you will apologize, Megden. Now. Head averted, her serving woman mumbled something that might have been an apology. She let it pass for one in any case. As for you, Aleandra, I expect you to be a good servant. Aleandra made a noise, a half-protest, that Fail ignored. If we are to have any chance of escape, we must do as we are told, work hard, and attract as little attention as possible. As if they had not already attracted what seemed all the attention in the world. And we will tell Thurava every time Savannah sneezes. I don't know what Savannah will do if she finds out, but I think we all have a good idea of what Thurava will do if we displease her. That was enough to settle them all back into muteness. They did all have a good idea of what Thurava would do, and killing might not be the worst of it. The snow faded away to a few scattered flakes by midday. Dark, roiling clouds still hid the sun, but Fail decided it must be near enough midday because they were fed. No one stopped moving, but hundreds of Gaishine made their way through the column with baskets and scrips full of bread and dried beef, and water bags that contained water this time, cold enough to make her teeth ache. Strangely, she felt no more hungry than hours of walking through snow would account for. Perrin had been healed once, she knew, and he had been ravenous for 2 days. Perhaps it was because her injuries had been so much less than his. She noticed that Aleandra and Megden ate no more than she. Healing made her think of Galena, all the same questions that boiled down to an incredulous, why? Why would an Aes Sedai, she must be Aes Sedai, why would she toady for Savannah and Thurava? For anyone. An Aes Sedai might help them escape. Or she might not. She might betray them if it suited her purposes. Aes Sedai did what they did, and you had no alternative but to accept that unless you were Randall Thor. But he was Taviran, and the dragon reborn on top of it. She was a woman with very few resources at the moment, and a considerable danger hanging over her head. Not to mention the heads of those she was responsible for. Any help would be welcome from anyone. The brisk breeze failed while she prodded at Galena from every angle she could think of, and the snow came again, growing heavier, until she could not see 10 paces. She could not decide whether to trust the woman. Abruptly she became aware of another white-robed woman watching her, almost hidden by the snow. Not enough snow to mask that wide, jeweled belt, though. Fail touched her companions on the arm and nodded toward Galena. When Galena saw she had been seen, she came to trudge along between Fail and Aleandra. She still did not move with any grace in the snow, but she seemed more used to walking in it than they. There was nothing of fawning about her now. Her round face was hard within her hood, her eyes sharp, but she did keep turning her head, darting wary glances to see who else was nearby. She looked like a house cat pretending to be a leopard. "You know who I am?" she demanded, but in a voice that would have been inaudible 10 feet off. "What I am?" "You seem to be Aes Sedai," Fail said carefully. "On the other hand, you have a very peculiar place here for an Aes Sedai." Neither Aleandra nor Megden gave the slightest start of surprise. Plainly they had already seen the great serpent ring that Galena was thumbing nervously. Color bloomed in Galena's cheeks, and she tried to make it out as anger. "What I do here is of great importance to the tower, child," she said coldly. Her expression said she had reasons they could not begin to comprehend.
Her eyes darted, trying to pierce the falling snow.
I must not fail. That is all you need to know.
We need to know whether we can trust you, Aleandra said calmly. You must have trained in the tower or you would not know healing, but women earn the ring without earning the shawl, and I cannot believe you are Aes Sedai.
It seemed Fael had not been the only one puzzling over the woman.
Galina's plump mouth hardened, and she clenched a fist at Aleandra, to threaten or show her ring or both.
You think they will treat you differently because you wear a crown? Because you used to wear one?
There was no doubt of her anger now. She forgot to keep lookout for listeners, and her voice was acid. Spittle flew with the force of her tirade.
You will bring Savannah wine and wash her back just like the rest. Her servants are all nobles or rich merchants, or men and women who know how to serve nobles. Every day she has 5 of them strapped to encourage the rest, so they all carry tales to her, hoping to curry favor. The first time you try to escape, they will switch the soles of your feet until you cannot walk and tie you twisted up like a blacksmith's puzzle to carry on a cart until you can. The second time will be worse, and the third worse again. There is a fellow here who used to be a white cloak. He tried to escape 9 times. A hard man, but the last time they brought him back, he was begging and crying before they even began stripping him for punishment.
Aleandra did not take the harangue well. She puffed up indignantly, and Magdan growled,
"Was that what happened to you? Whether Aes Sedai or accepted, you are a disgrace to the tower." "Be silent when your betters speak, Wilder," Galina snapped.
"Light, if this went any further, they would be screaming at one another next." "If you mean to help us escape, then say so," Fael told the silk-clad Aes Sedai. She did not really doubt that about the woman, just everything else. "If not, what do you want with us?" Ahead of them, a wagon loomed out of the snow, leaning where one of the sleds had come loose. Directed by a Shido with the arms and shoulders of a blacksmith, Gaishine were rigging a lever to hoist the wagon enough for the sled to be lashed back in place. Fael and the others kept silent as they passed.
"Is this really your liege lady, Aleandra?" Galina demanded once they were out of earshot of the men around the wagon.
Her face was still flushed with anger, her tone slicing.
"Who is she that you would swear to her?"
"You can ask me," Fael said coldly. "Burn Aes Sedai and their bloody secrecy. Sometimes she thought an Aes Sedai would not tell you the sky was blue unless she saw advantage in it."
"I am the Lady Fael Tebara, and that's as much as you need to know. Do you mean to help us?"
Galina stumbled to one knee, peering at Fael so hard that she began to wonder whether she had made a mistake. A moment later, she knew she had. Regaining her feet, the Aes Sedai smiled unpleasantly. She no longer seemed angry. In fact, she looked as pleased as Therava had, and worse, in much the same way. "Tebara," she mused, "you are Saldaean. There is a young man, Perrin Abara.
Your husband?"
"Yes, I see I've hit the target. That would explain Aleandra's oath, certainly. Savannah has grandiose plans for a man whose name is linked to your husband, Randall Thor. If she knew she had you in her hands, oh, never fear, she will learn from me." Her gaze hardened, and suddenly she seemed a leopard in truth, a starving leopard.
"Not if you all do as I tell you. I will even help you get away."
"What do you want of us?" Fael said, more insistently than she felt. Light, she had been angry at Aleandra for drawing attention to them by naming herself, and now she had done the same, or worse. "And I thought I was concealing myself by hiding my father's name," she thought bitterly.
"Nothing too trying," Galina replied. "You marked Therava, of course."
"Of course you did. Everyone notices Therava. She keeps something in her tent, a smooth white rod about 1 foot long. It is in a red chest with brass banding that is never locked. Bring it to me and I will take you with me when I go."
"A small thing to do, it seems," Aleandra said doubtfully. "But if so, why do you not take it yourself?"
"Because I have you to fetch it for me."
Realizing she had shouted, Galina huddled in on herself, and her cowl swung as she searched for eavesdroppers among the snow-veiled throng. No one seemed to be so much as glancing their way, but her voice dropped to a feral hiss.
"If you do not, I will leave you here until you are gray and wrinkled, and Savannah will hear of Perinay Barra."
"It may take time," Fael said desperately. "We won't be free to just sneak into Thirava's tent whenever we want." Light, the last thing in the world she wanted was to go anywhere near Thirava's tent. But Galena had said she would help them. Vile she might be, but Aes Sedai could not lie. "You have all the time you need," Galena replied. "The rest of your life, Lady Fael Tebara, if you are not careful. Do not fail me." She gave Fael a last hard stare, then turned to labor away into the snow, holding her arms as if trying to hide her jeweled belt behind her wide sleeves. Fael struggled onward in silence. Neither of her companions had anything to say either. There did not seem to be anything to say. Alejandra appeared sunk in thought, hands in her sleeves, peering straight ahead as if seeing something beyond the blizzard. Magden had gone back to gripping her golden collar in a tight fist. They were caught in three snares, not one, and any of the three might kill. Rescue suddenly seemed very attractive. Somehow, though, Fael intended to find her way out of this trap. Pulling her hand away from her own collar, she fought through the snowstorm, planning.